Jessica Kidwell, and this is Neuroversity. Today, we're doing something a little different in preparation for the upcoming holiday season and in an effort to demonstrate what doing the work actually looks like. I have been educating myself on ways to cultivate neurodiverse friendly gatherings. It's a chance to look at the ways and the whys we gather and celebrate in the traditional ways that we do, and to maybe try and spend a moment in someone else's neurotype. And I figured it might be helpful for others, so here we go. One of the great unifying experiences we can all have as humans is that the holidays are super stressful. I don't care whether you're neurotypical like me or neurodivergent, they're stressful. And the best way I have found to combat stress for myself is preparation. Regardless of how comfortable it is, to hope for the best and wing it. I also have found through my many years of experience that is a recipe for burnout, anxiety, usually fights, and, well, not so jolly outcomes. So as a gift to myself and perhaps to you, I've curated many helpful hints and reminders from a few of the actually neurodivergent resources that I use to educate myself. And be sure to head to the show notes for this episode to get links to all of the incredible neurodivergent individuals that are generous with sharing their experiences on platforms that allow people like me to benefit from it. Despite feeling super overwhelmed to start your own neurodivergent education, I highly recommend these individuals as being a great starting point. The first topic I want to talk about is big communal meals. Between the change in routine, the variety of foods and personalities that gather, and the sheer volume of sounds, smells, and sights, it's no wonder holiday gatherings can be rife with opportunities to be a nightmare for anyone, but especially neurodivergent individuals. I'm not exactly proud to admit that I spent many years in the past trying to prep my autistic daughter before holidays or vacations to fit herself into the expectations of the neurotypical people she was going to be encountering. Luckily, I have become a late bloomer and I have learned to adopt a mindset that some of it is about prepping my daughter, some of it is about prepping other people, and most of it is about prepping myself. So, an excellent guideline I want to start with comes from Susan Issa, who is an emotional regulation and neurodiversity specialist for families and individuals. She has taken an interesting spin on the Pareto principle, which is an 80-20 concept that 80% of consequences come from 20% of causes. Her 80-20 consists of aiming to meet 80% of the neurodivergent needs in order to have 20% compromise. So obviously this is not an all or nothing equation, and a holiday situation may actually throw that balance off, but I like using it as a guidepost to remind myself of how often I ask someone who is neurodivergent to meet my neurotypical needs. A lot of neurotypical-based therapies come from the mindset that the more we expose neurodivergent individuals to uncomfortable sensory situations, that will then, over time, much like a muscle, build their resistance and resilience to those uncomfortable sensory situations. But Susan Issa has blown my mind by reframing it and looking at it much more like what happens to a joint. Forget the muscle that then changes and gets stronger over time. What if we look at sensory stimulation for neurodivergent individuals as the wear and tear that happens to joints over time? So the more I ask a neurodivergent person to meet my neurotypical needs, I am wearing away at a finite amount of flexibility. that a neurodivergent person may have. Muscles get stronger with exposure to stress and exertion. Joints degrade over time with exposure to stress and exertion. This has helped me so much to understand why there are days when sensory stimulation can be tolerated and then days where that exact same amount of stimulation can overwhelm. There is not a cumulative increase in the capacity of resilience for neurodivergent individuals. Rather, there is a finite capacity for overstimulation to be tolerated. And I, as the neurotypical one, need to recognize how many times I am asking myself and others to use up their supply. Isn't that a great reframe? We need to recognize how many times we are asking others to use up their supply. I know that in my experience, I've grown tremendously in the way that I communicate with my daughter before trips or family gatherings. And full disclosure, that is much easier for us now because, number one, she's able to discern what works and doesn't work for her much more now as a 15-year-old than when she was younger. So I take my cues from her instead of trying to guess where or what she needs. And also, she actually has an innate desire to become less rigid and has recently been enjoying putting herself in uncomfortable situations to see how she handles it. However, that's just a snapshot of now, and that might not be something she continues to do. So again, the key is taking my cues from her on perhaps what the 80-20 negotiations might look like ahead of time. Lauren Melissa Elzey, who is known on her social media accounts as AutiNL, is an autistic self-advocate who posts incredibly helpful Audi tips on a variety of topics, but her post about navigating Thanksgiving and how autistics experience a gathering like that provided me with a lot to think about. First, she notes that family gatherings are often full of high expectations and can require neurodivergent people to mask. As a reminder, masking is when someone hides their neurodivergent behavior, like stimming, less eye contact, voice modulation, in order to appear more neurotypical. It's usually done to make neurotypical people feel more comfortable, or in some cases, a neurodivergent person will mask in order to feel safe from judgment or, frankly, physical harm. So masking is incredibly exhausting, physically and mentally, from what I have been told and what I have observed, regardless of how effortless it appears. So going into a large family gathering or a social situation, neurodivergent individuals already know that the masking expectations are higher than what they perhaps choose to live with on a day-to-day basis. That's number one. Second, she offers really great advice for neurodivergent people on how to set themselves up for success. Set boundaries with the dinner host ahead of time. Do not feel compelled to try new foods to be polite. Stick to safe foods in order to avoid overwhelm. She gives a great example of when she was younger being forced at a Thanksgiving meal to try an aunt's pumpkin pie because it was the polite thing to do, despite the fact that everyone in her immediate family knew that the texture of pumpkin pie did not work for her. And it has led me to think about situations in which, regardless of your child's neurodivergent or not, why do we force kids to try things? I think that there's a thin line between pushing to widen someone's experiences and forcing someone into an uncomfortable situation because we have decided that being polite is more important than someone's comfort. Another tip is to take frequent outdoor walks or go interact with pets or young children if that is something that you enjoy doing to give yourself a social break. Identify in advance if there's a quiet space to head to if you just need to get away. This one's a little bit tough, regardless whether you're neurodivergent or not. This is about boundaries, and it is difficult to feel like it's okay to say no to an invitation if it doesn't work for you. But an alternative way to handle it is to make a future plan to see this particular person or family member in a way that has less pressure and expectation. So if you find that you just feel like you cannot go to the holiday party, just make an effort to find another time in a way that works better for you. Another great source who makes beautiful infographics that are easily understood is Yulika Foreman. She's also known on her social media accounts as the Expert Ally. Yulika is a special education consultant and psychologist, and she coaches neurodivergent adults and parents of neurodivergent children. She recently shared the four S's of a holiday celebration as an autistic child or adult: safe food, safe space, schedule predictability, and sensory needs. So we're back to the food. I think a great takeaway is we all need to take a look at why it's so important to us personally, why someone who clearly turns something down and says, no, I don't want to try that, why do we feel like we need to force that square peg into a round hole? The safe space is very similar to what Atienel advocates for, which is finding that safe spot that might be just a room where you can be alone to recharge. Schedule and predictability, it is not unreasonable to ask what's going to happen at a family gathering, about how many people are coming, how long are we expecting to be there, about how long after we get there will we be eating. Is there anything we know that is going to happen after eating and before leaving? These are not unreasonable requests, and they go a long way to helping neurodivergent individuals feel a little bit more prepared and therefore putting a little bit less pressure on those sensory joints. And speaking of sensory, that last S from the Expert Ally is sensory needs. If you or your child needs headphones or loop earplugs or a particular fidget, bring them. What is the harm in having tried and true sensory needs available to yourself or to your child when you go into a knowingly stressful situation? Bring that lovey, bring that fidget, bring those headphones, bring that game, whatever it is that works for you, feel free to bring it, because it's better to have it and use it if you need it than to need it and not have it. That's for sure. This is in no way an exhaustive list of things to be aware of, but just a gathering of ideas that I have found that have been helpful for me personally, as well as being a neurotypical parent of an autistic child, to prepare myself for sensory spots that could be very uncomfortable for my daughter. And it is a great opportunity to learn more from the neurodivergent individuals that you care about in your life to find out what helps them feel more comfortable. What are the sensory needs that they have? Asking is the number one way to find out how we can improve the lived experience of neurodivergent individuals and how we can make this most wonderful time of the year less stressful and actually a holiday gathering that's universal for all. Neuroversity is hosted and produced by Jessica Kidwell. Our audio engineer is Jarrett Nicolay at Mixtape Studios. Jarrett also created our theme music. Graphic design for Neuroversity by Kevin Adkins. Web support is provided by George Fox. For more information about this episode, ways to support the podcast, or anything related to Neuroversity, please visit our website at www.neuroversitypod.com. You can also follow us on your podcast app and social media sites. We are at NeuroversityPod on Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook. And if you like what we're doing, please tell others about Neuroversity and give us a review on Apple Podcasts. There's plenty of room for more curious minds to enroll.